you weren't here last week, we had a lot of fun. We've been going through this series called Impact, a series of how the gospel has impacted the world. We're going through the book of Acts. And last week, it was one of my favorite stories. I just laugh. If you remember right, there were some people claiming to cast out demons in the name of Jesus, who Paul preaches about. And the demons knew who Paul was. They knew who Jesus was, but they didn't know who these guys were. And it was just a good old butt whooping. It was kind of funny, because it just happens that way. Well, because of that, and because of everything in the power of Jesus' name, people brought their scrolls of their spells and the different things that they had been believing and worshiping and having a part of that, and they brought them in for a big bonfire, and they said it came to basically a day's wage, 50,000 days' wages, which we figured up today would be $8.8 million. Now, when $8.8 million disappears up in smoke in a town, that gets noticed. Just saying, it happens. And so today our story is going to kind of be a continuation of that, but really we're going to have a good thing of looking at who is God. Isn't that a great question? Who is God? It's kind of a big question, isn't it? Our story today is going to look at the failed attributes of the Greek gods, because it comes up that way, and the incredible absolute values of our living God that we serve. But let's start. I want to have some fun today. I want to start by ourselves creating a new religion. Can we do that? Yeah. I think we're going to do that. Here's the thing. I found this, and I think we're going to call it our own. I think I can get some of you actually to agree with me with this religion. We're going to call it the religion of bacon. Okay? That's because you just can't go wrong with that, right? And so we're going to create a new religion called bacon. Now, this image fell from heaven back when pigs could fly, and landed in an apple tree outside of a Goodwill store where I happened to pick it up. And the rumors are that there are other similar gods out there named like this, named Hickory and Peppered, but for our sake, this one's going to be named Applewood. Okay? Now, the more we worship him, the more we get bacon, right? Doesn't that not sound like a good religion to have? I mean, I like bacon. It's always good. In fact, I was calling some people. I didn't have any at home. I was like, oh, we need to get some bacon like this. And we got... Oops. Hey, folks, there's no bacon on your sandwiches today because we just upset the bacon god. You already ate, yeah. Danny goes, I already ate mine for breakfast, man. I'm good. I'm already ahead of you. Oh, well. See, the thing is you laugh. But there are people out there who actually have views that something like this actually has the power to give you something. Whatever. Yeah, that's all good. But isn't it amazing, though, what people put their faith in? You guys thought it was crazy. Oh, really, we're going to put our faith in a ceramic statue of this, but people put their faith in these things all the time. People put their faith in their bank accounts, in their cars, in their jobs, in their relationships. People put their faith and make God out of all these different things. And we're going to see that today. We're going to talk a little bit about theology. And I know it's maybe not what you think about. So if we're going to talk about theology, I think I need to let you guys know a little bit about what people think about God and the different types of gods and the different things that people have. Now, the thing is there are groups of people out there who don't believe there's a God. You guys have heard of them, right? They're called atheists, and that's basically coming from the fact that the prefix alpha in front of theist means there's no God. It negates that. So they actually believe that there is no God out there at all. There's no God at all. There's others who believe in what we call an agnostic view, and that's a view of, well, there's a God out there, but he's too big, or I'm not interested in him right now, I'm not worried about that. I believe there's a God somewhere, whatever, but I just choose right now not to believe him. Or he's too big for us even to understand, kind of thing. There's an evolution view. You guys have heard those. Those are the big ones that come out a lot. But have you ever heard of a polytheistic view? Polytheistic view is that there's a whole bunch of gods. In fact, Paul dealt with this in Athens. Remember, he went and he said all the different gods, and they had one god of the god of the unknown god, just in case we missed one. Well, they were pantheistic. They were polytheistic. They believed in all kinds of gods all over everything. There was a god for everything. There'd be a god for bacon, kind of thing. That would be their view. There's also the pantheistic gods. Now, that pantheistic God is that God's in everything. So, and we have those living around here. There's God in the trees, the tree huggers. Okay, there's a God of trees and the nature. And because we live in the mountains and we have some incredible glory and beauty, we have a lot of pantheistic people that believe it's all about, ooh, look at the eagle flying. That was God. That was a God. God's just in everything of nature and is there. So everything in nature, we're part of nature. You could be a God. Kind of thing, and God is in you that way too. And it's off the thing. And then the last one is a deist who believes that there's no way we could have a personal relationship with a God. And these are all huge things, but people believe them. I mean, that came out of my theology book, and that's just some of them. That people believe all kinds of things about God. Well, God's pretty impressive, but what are we going to learn about him today is pretty impressive as well. Because what we're going to see is the Greek gods, and I'm not trying to smash any religion or whatever kind of thing like this, but what the Greek gods believe is an interesting thing. And so we're going to look at the story today. It's in Acts chapter 19, starting in verse 23. And we're just going to continue, and I'm going to read it for you, and then we'll continue on with the story and look at some of the things. So remember, $8.8 million worth of stuff just went up in smoke, and this is what it says. About that time, there grew a great disturbance in the way, or the following of Jesus. A silversmith named Demetrius, who had made silver shrines to Artemis, brought a lot of business in for craftsmen there. He called them all together among the workers that related trades, all those people, and he said, "You know, my friends, we receive a good income from this business. And you see and hear how this fellow Paul has convinced and led astray a large number of people here at Ephesus, and in practically the whole world of Asia, and province of Asia. He says that gods made by human hands are no gods at all. There is a danger not only that our trade will lose its good name, but also that the temple of our great goddess Artemis might be discredited, and that the goddess herself, who is worshipped throughout all of province of Asia and the world, will be robbed of her divine majesty." Now when they heard this, they were furious and began shouting, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians!" And soon the whole city was in an uproar. And people seized Gaius and Articus, a couple traveling companions of Paul's from Macedonia, and they rushed into the theater there. Now Paul wanted to appear before the crowd, but the disciples told him, not a good idea. And then some of the officials of the province, friends of Paul's, even sent a message to him and begged him not to venture into the theater. Now the assembly was in confusion. Some were shouting one thing, and some were shouting another. Most people didn't even know why they were there. Now the Jews of the crowd pushed Alexander to the front, and they shouted instructions to him. And they motioned him to silence in order to make a defense for the people. But when they realized he was a Jew, they all started shouting in unison for about 2 hours. "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians." For 2 hours. The city clerk finally calmed them down and said, "Fellow Ephesians, doesn't all the world know that the city of Ephesus is the guardian of the temple of the great Artemis and her image that fell from heaven? Therefore, since these facts are undeniable, you ought to calm down and not do anything rash. You have brought these men here, though they have not robbed the temples or blasphemed our goddess. If the Demetrius and his fellow craftsmen have a grievance against anybody, the courts are open and they should see the proconsuls, and they can press charges. If there's anything further we want to bring up, it must be settled in a legal assembly. As it is, folks, right now we're in danger of being charged with rioting because of what's happened today. In this case, it would not be able for us to account for the commotion, since there's no reason for it." And after this, he dismissed them. So, goes on for 2 hours, a riot of people just screaming about their God. Kind of crazy. Now, I want you to notice something. What starts the whole riot? Because it causes problems throughout the world. What's the main source of the problem that starts the whole riot? You know what that is? Money. Follow the money. Right? That's what it is. The money's the problem. It's what starts the whole riot. These guys all of a sudden lose their business. And one guy says, "Man, I lost some money when all that stuff went up, and all those people are not going to be following what we've been doing and all these things we've been creating, and the silversmith and the tradesmen and the plaster people and all the stone carvers. All these people are going to lose their business if Paul continues on preaching that there's only one God and he's a God in heaven, and that there's no gods that are made by human hands. We can't have this." And so it starts out with money, but he uses whatever he can to figure it out. Realize, folks, most of our problems in our nation and in our country and in our world all happen because of money. Most of the problems in your life probably happen because of lack of money. So we all say, right? Or those different kind of things. But have you noticed how it's always there? It's a part of it. Now, here's what's interesting. They're going to do this, and they're going to bring this up, and they're saying it's all about God. See, the thing is it's interesting because he says, Paul is preaching that any God made by human hands is not a God. Now, think about that for a second. I'll give you another example. I got another one. You guys know who this is, right? And it's even got a little hole in his tummy for you to put a candle or a stick in or whatever for happy birthday, I guess, or whatever. I don't know. But we all know what this is. And there are people, the thing is people, there's a religion out there that worship this. It's a little idol. It's a little Buddha idol. Don't worry, I didn't spend a lot of money. It was a Goodwill too. Okay? And the thing is people worship a statue of a dead guy, thinking that somehow this is going to change their life. Now, they might have some good moral character, some good moral teaching, some good things that actually might actually help your health or your life or those kind of things, but they're just teachings. And those teachings can change your life if you apply them to practice, but a statue made out of plaster doesn't change your life. But people say, oh, because it's created in the image of something. We showed that one. You can create the image of a pig. You can create the image of whatever. But anything that you create, you have power over. Correct? Anything that you make or create, you have the power over it. Whether it's music, whether it's art, whether it's cooking or whatever. I mean, some of you are like, oh, I didn't have any power over that cooking. I don't know what happened to that dish. It's not me kind of thing. But you have the power over it. And anything that we create with our human hands, we have power over. Sorry. It's the way it is. Now think about it. We started off with the question, who is God? Do you want to serve a God that you can control? There's a lot of people out there that do. They want to serve a God that they can control. God, you only help me with this. In fact, last week I said, a lot of people think that God is just kind of an add-on as an accessory to their life. Oh, I have this, and I'm this kind of person. I have this. I have this, my occupation. Oh, and I have God here, too. I put him on as a necklace. It's a little cross thing, and he's an accessory to my life. Folks, the world does not revolve around you, and God is not an accessory of yours. You are a player in his journey, in his process of redeeming the world and all that goes with it. And you can be used by him, or you can choose not to be used by him, but it's up to you. The thing is it says, they said, Paul's preaching that the gods that are made with human hands, there are no gods at all. Well, the thing is that's true. What Paul was preaching was true. Now, here's the interesting thing, and I thought it kind of interesting as well, because he talked about the great god of Artemis, and how she could be discredited. Actually, the temple could be discredited, and I can see how a building could be discredited, but it said the goddess herself would be robbed of her divine majesty. How can any of us rob a god of divine majesty? You do realize that, how do you discredit God? Now, I believe that there are people who discredit God in the way they live. They don't live their life accordingly. They are bad witness. They discredit the witness of God. But it doesn't change God. Folks, here's the thing. If you obey or whether you don't obey, whether you sin or you don't sin, it does not change who God is. God is still God. And he's still holy and he's still powerful. Just because we're human and we make mistakes does not change who God is. God is still God. And here they're saying, oh, because this guy's preaching this, he's going to discredit the temple and he's even going to possibly rob her of her godliness, of her divine majesty. How can you do that? I mean, think about it. Can you really discredit God? Can you really rob God of his godliness, of his holiness? But you could apparently with Artemis. And she was discredited and robbed or whatever. It's crazy. The thing is divine majesty is not anything described by a human. Here's the thing. God we serve that Paul is preaching about is far above all other gods. You remember in the Old Testament when the Ark of the Covenant was taken by the Philistines? And it's really funny, they took it to the Philistines and they thought, oh, we'll put it with our god, Dagon. And they put it in the temple with him. And they got up the next morning and the statue, the piece of stone, is laid down, face down, at the Ark of God. It's a rock. That's all it was. And they're like, oh, this is kind of crazy. So they stand back up because in their mind, their god's better because they captured our god. And so they stand back up. And then the next day comes, and not only does the god fall off, his head falls off, his feet fall off, and on part of the door. And this is the reason why some people don't step on, in that religion, they don't step on the door threshold anymore. Because our god is even god of the rocks. Because that's all he was. And people don't grasp the power of God. This is what made the Jews so much different than all the societies around them. All the societies around them had these different gods for different things, whatever. And here comes a society that doesn't have an image. There's no image of God. The image of God is Jesus Christ when he came down to earth. But they don't have an image that they worship. They just worship the God. Where is he? He's everywhere. He's everywhere. You can't hide from him. You can't. I mean, if this was the case, the bacon thing, and I broke the bacon statue, I could maybe hide from the bacon god and glue it back together so that we could still have bacon for lunch, right? That would be the idea. But you can't hide from our God. He's the living God. See, Paul was preaching that our God's above all other gods. He's not like human hands. In Malachi 3:6, even God says, I, the Lord, I don't change. I am God. And it's pretty impressive. The thing is masses of people, if you've noticed this, tend to be ignorant. Have you noticed that? Masses of people tend to be ignorant on things. There's a confusion that dwells up. They start chanting and yelling. They don't have a clue. Some people don't even know why they're there. Hey, there's a gathering downtown. Let's go, whatever. We can hear them. Let's go find out what's going on. And they all show up. They don't even have a clue. They just showed up because everybody got together. You know, they have no idea. And then once they start shouting and figure out what it is, everybody joins in and they're shouting, and who cares? They shout for 2 hours. Now I have a question. Did it make a difference in their God? Was their God being worshipped? Was their God being praised? Did she get stronger because everybody started shouting? No. Nothing. Isn't it amazing? It's kind of funny because the city clerk, I don't know if he's the mayor or whatever, he says something very interesting. He says, because we're from Ephesus, we know that everybody knows that we're the guardian of her temple. And we're guarding of her image, which fell from heaven. In fact, he says, and these facts are undeniable. I'm like, no, they're deniable. Really? An image of God, of this God fell from heaven, and that's what you're supposed to worship. It was pretty interesting. Most of these places also had a high place where they had stairs that just led to nothing. Did you know that? Or they'd have stairs that led to a house, and there's no doors in the house. But they went ahead and built the house, and this is where, when the God comes and visits, this is where the God would stay, just so you know. And the servants had to take care and make sure he had food and water and clean the restrooms and whatever else of that God in case the God came and stayed. So all these places, even Ephesus, had a stairway going someplace to a building that had nothing. But that was the place where that God dwelt. If we were going to have a bit, you know, like the big worship festival, maybe God, that God would show up and would be in that house. And there, we would never know, really, because they wouldn't check or anything, because you weren't allowed to go up there. It's this craziness. The thing is the whole assembly's in confusion. And it says, man, these facts are undeniable. And Paul's saying, no, they are. You totally can, that's not the case. Because the gods that you guys have that you're worshiping are made by your own hands. They're simply stones. They're simply rocks. They're simply silver. That's all they are. There's nothing to them. But the God that we worship gives us life and breath. God, our God can take you out. So it needs to be. It can just happen. You're gone. I mean, our God is much more impressive than the gods they have here. The interesting thing is they say these facts are undeniable, but they are. people that make up undeniable things all the time. They say, oh, this is the truth no matter what, you know, and Bronco fans will do it, Chiefs fans will do it. Everyone will end up doing, making undeniable facts. We're the greatest, we're the whatever. No, they are deniable. But when it comes to our God is undeniably God. For instance, this Buddha of our times, that people actually have of this time, I mean, let's face it, does anybody here think there's some kind of spiritual aspect to this? No. The nice way to put it is, I'm going to drop the hammer on it. Oh, well. But I can't drop the hammer on our God, but He can drop it on me. Think about this. God, whole nations, there's whole nations, we talked about that a while back, there's whole nations that worship that, and they have no concept who Jesus is. Whole nations who worship things that are created. Do we worship the things that are created, or we worship the Creator? The Creator is the one we do. There are some things undeniable about our God. And in fact, I'm going to do this to help you out. Just, I'm going to read you a definition of who God is. Now, this is out of my theology book, so it might be kind of big and wordy, but you kind of grasp it. This is the reason why I have going for a master's degree. God, here's a definition by Gordon Lewis. Comprehensive definition of God. God is invisible, personal, a living spirit, distinguished from all other spirits by several kinds of attributes. Metaphysically, God is self-existent, eternal, unchanging, intellectually, God is omniscient, faithful, and wise. Ethically, God is just, merciful, and loving. Emotionally, God detests evil and is long-suffering and is compassionate. And existently, God is free, authentic, omnipotent. Relationally, God is transcendent in a being, imminent universally and pervaded of all activity, imminent with His people in a redemptive activity. Basically, God is a God who's everywhere, who's all-powerful, who's all-faithful, who's all-loving, who's all-gracious, who's all-kind. Those are words I can stand and suppose them other ones. Those are crazy. But think about it. Our God is a spiritual God. He's not a spirit, but He's spiritual. God is God. And He's existed from the beginning. He's self-existent, which means He was there to begin with. And some people have a hard time with that. Well, how can that happen? There's a part of life in our faith where we have to have faith. And God was there in the beginning. So it says, in the beginning. God. Right there, the first four words of the Bible. In the beginning, God. That's it. His eminence means that he's involved in His creation. He's been a part of creation ever since, and He's involved in yours and my life. He is immutable, perfection of God. He's devoid of any change. I read that one. There's more. The attributes of God are amazing. He's unity. In God, there's unity. He's truth. See, the hard part about truth thing is because we find stuff that's like 99.9% truth. But is that really true if there's a percentage that's false? But God is 100% truth. Everything He does and says, God is love. Every time God deals with you, it's in love. Now, we don't always like that because we think God doesn't love me because He's punishing me. Now, do you love your children? Do you sometimes have to punish your children? Discipline them. It's not a mean thing. You're not trying to be mean. You're not just the old grandpa that's just mean and angry at everybody on the earth. No, He's not that kind of a God. But He wants us to grow and mature and become the good people that we're supposed to be, the followers that He can use. Every way He deals with us, He deals with us in love. He's goodness. God is holy and holiness. That means set apart. Things are completely different. I think I mentioned this to you in the Jewish times. You were not supposed to wear clothing that was mixed of two types of cloth. Most of us have a 50-50, you know, polyester, cotton. Wouldn't be wearing those. Because in the Jewish times, and the things like this, the only cloth that was mixed of two different kinds of cloth, only clothing that was that way, was the high priest. And he was set apart, and it was holy. Everybody else, you either were one or the other, but you never mixed them. Why? Because it was set apart. Because only the high priest wore it to go in to see God at that time with the Ark of the Covenant and offer a sacrifice. He was the only one. That was separate because that was God's. God is holy. God is transcendent. It means his transcendent. He can be everywhere at once. He's eternal. That's a hard one for us to grasp because everything in our mind is lined up on a time frame. You were born, you have a birthday, you have another birthday, you have job, you have high school, you have graduation, you have all these different things. Everything in our mind is lined up on a linear time frame. But God exists the whole time. All the time. We can come and we can go. God still exists and still continues on. His omnipresence, he's everywhere. He's omniscient, he knows everything. He's omnipotent, he's all-powerful. These things are just attributes of God. And the thing is the God that we serve, what's really cool about that, all those attributes of God, the God that we serve, is that he cares about us. That big, huge God of all those things cared enough to send his son to die on the cross for us. Because he knew sin was going to be a problem for us. It entered the world, it's a problem, and he already had before the time a redemption plan. His son was going to come to earth and offer forgiveness and grace and mercy. And when he did that, which happened 2,000 years ago, he did it for all the sins. All of our sins down the road. Everything. And that grace and that mercy, he did that because he loves his creation, us. We were made in his image, both male and female. We're made in his image. He loves us. And some people say, oh, well, why doesn't God just, you know, take care of sin all the way to begin with and not have this problem, whatever? And the question comes up, and I've said it before, those of you who have parents, why do you have kids? You know that your kids are going to disappoint you. They're going to cause problems. They're going to get in trouble. They're going to disobey you and blatantly, right to your face. They're going to be injured. They're going to defy you. Some of them might not ever talk to you again because they're mad or whatever kind of thing. Why would you have kids? Because you love them, don't you? You love them. Even when they're being snot-nosed brats, you still love them. Because they're your kids. They're your creation. God allowed you to have that and allowed you to manage those kids. Now, we're not the best parents. We're not the best people. I get that. I understand that. But we serve a Heavenly Father who loves us. And what is more exciting than to have the love of a child return to you? You know those times? You know what I'm talking about? You have no idea. They just come out of nowhere and they come up and they go, Dad, I love you. Really? Yeah. Or they come up and say, Dad, thanks. After they've left the house and realized what life is really like, they come back and say, Mom, Dad, I really love you. I appreciate all you did for us. It doesn't happen while they're in your house, right? It happens afterwards. And those times, they're just special, aren't they? It's pretty special. There's a commercial on TV right now where one of the daughters, just like her dad, and she's got the 1970s socks, tube socks like this, and the husband's trying to figure out, man, this woman is acting crazy. She's acting just like her dad. And she's trying to work on it, whatever, like this. And that commercial was on, and it was kind of funny because one of my sons, I don't even think he realized what he said. And this person says, man, you're being just like your dad. And one of my kids got up and said, you know, I'd be okay being just like my dad. He can do about anything. And walked out of the room. And I went, did I just hear that? That's kind of cool. You know, thank you. I appreciate that. It's moments like that that make you want to be a father, make you want to be a parent. And when we come back and we worship God, when we do our best to live our life and obey and do everything like that, man, it just brings that kind of joy to God. He's already provided a way, and some of you guys have already provided, right? Your kid got in trouble and you provided a way out. Maybe you didn't take their place like God did for us, but you've paid the price for their wrongdoing. And they don't even get it. They didn't even realize what happened. And there's a lot of people out there that don't even realize what God did for us and give us His Son. This is pretty a simple thing, folks. The God we serve is far higher than any God that's made by human hands. He's a God that loves you just the way you are, and He'll accept you that way. But He loves you enough not to leave you that way. He's going to change and shape you and mold you, discipline you, and help you grow to be the person that He knows you can be. Don't you guys know that? You see your kids, and you see the potential they have, right? You're thinking, oh, man, you could do this. And you see the potential. Good teachers see the potential in their students. Good parents see the potential in their kids. And they know, man, if I can help you out, you could be amazing at this. You could be awesome at this. God says that with us. He looks at each and every one of you and says, man, I have so much potential for you. You could do so much for me if you're just willing to follow me and willing to obey. Get rid of the sin in your life. It's messing you up. And follow me. And we talked a little bit about the God that we serve. Folks, when you walk out of this place, you should realize our God's an awesome God. Our God's an incredible God. The fact that He loves us should blow your mind. That should just, there it is, gone. It's so amazing what God's done. And so many times we come to church, we go wherever we're at, and we just kind of forget what God's done for us. Folks, this week, I don't want you to forget what God's done for you. If you haven't given your life to Jesus Christ and have a relationship with Him, boy, I encourage you to do that. Let's talk. Most of you have. Most of you do. I would encourage, get right with God. If you're sinning or off or whatever, get right with Him. And then try to be obedient and follow Him and just see what God's going to do in your life. I'm excited. I see the potential in this church and what this church could do. I can see the potential of what people that are here and what they could do with the power of God working in them if they're just willing. And I'm excited. I know it's the summertime and people are here and there and gone and everything like that, but I still see the potential of what this could be. And it's so exciting. And God's so excited about it. He wants to use us. It's incredible. We're going to stand and we're going to sing a invitation song. If you have a decision to make, we invite you to come. If you want prayer, we invite you to come. And we're going to sing a song. And it's a really good song because the first line of it says, you're not a God made by human hands. And the song really goes along with what we've been talking about today. It's pretty incredible. And as we leave this place, we want to leave praising Him for what He's done for us. Would you stand with us as we sing?